there are overwhelming, turbulent times, but that also means there is major potential to fill the cracks with new ideas and to transform these destructive systems. There are specific root causes for problems and holistic solutions everywhere. There is room for prosperity, there is room for regeneration and a shift in values. Another reality is possible, and that's what we're exploring here today. Welcome to Sage Talking.
If you pollute a river, you have to pay for your pollution. If you exploit a person, you have to pay for that exploitation. Now we're not paying the true cost of our items. We're actually producing very cheap, overproducing very cheap and throwing it away. And all these valuable resources and all these labor hours really literally go to waste.
Kiki, you don't need so much introduction because you were on the podcast before. So I'm going to also link that episode down below where we talked first, which is called Kiki Borrell Talks Climate Crisis in Fashion Industry, which was a really nice episode as well. So we're obviously going to be talking about the fashion industry and all the different things that kind of go into that. You just attended Copenhagen Fashion Week, which is also called Sustainable Fashion Week. Why is that?
So the Copenhagen Fashion Week is called the Sustainable Fashion Week or front runner in sustainability, but also the fifth fashion week. So after New York, London, Milan and Paris, which are the other big fashion weeks. And what makes Copenhagen Fashion Week different is that they require brands to have certain or meet certain minimal standards. So there's 18 minimal standards that brands need to meet. And that could be either 50% of their materials in their collection have to be recycled, upcycled, lower impact materials. But it could also be, I do not give out gift bags at my show. And that there's 18 different minimal requirements that they just need to have 18 out of 18. And then there are 60 additional questions that go a little bit more in depth on different focus areas, strategy, design, material choice, labor. So also a social part. Then there is a part that's all about the consumer. And then the last one is about the details of the fashion show itself. And there are 60 questions about these different areas, and only the brands that score 40 points or more are allowed to show at the official Copenhagen Fashion Week schedule. So that really sets the Fashion Week apart from the other fashion weeks that do not have these sustainable requirements for the brands.
It really does. I think that's amazing. And it kind of is the sign to say we can change the status quo and we have different values and ethics that we don't want compromised. And we really want accountability. So I think this is really a sign of accountability, which I thought it was such an interesting topic. Because I think for many people, the question is, with all the crisis and problems going on in the world, people might ask, you know, why talk about fashion and why talk about fashion so much? Because they think, you know, there are bigger industries to tackle, like the fossil fuel industry. But, you know, it's the fashion industry is also an extent of the fossil fuel industry. And it is indeed one of the world's biggest polluters regarding air, water and soil pollution, taking the sixth place, actually, with 2.1 billion tons of greenhouse gas emissions annually after energy, transportation, manufacturing and construction, agriculture and the food retail sector. And it actually has an even higher impact than the whole tech industry, according to statistics by the eco experts. So I think it's something that 100% needs looking at and changing, because as I said, it does not just include fashion in itself, but it's a vessel for other problems like overconsumption, exploitation of precious resources, human trafficking, human and non-human suffering, disregard and disrespect kind of for the natural world, as well as greed, etc. So taking all of this into account, and I know people say these things all the time, but I think it's good to keep reminding people, you know, how strongly do you feel that Copenhagen Fashion Week was this season in terms of progressiveness, consciousness, and the genuine change that was displayed there, you know, in light of all these problems that the fashion industry brings?
Yeah, so I think you sum it very nicely, the dark side of the fashion industry. And I would like to add, there's one more thing, and that's that the fashion industry is very good and better than these other industries that you mentioned at really covering up how polluting it actually is. The fashion industry is a massive marketing machine, and they are the best thing they can do is sell you things you don't need. And they honestly, they shape the whole idea of desire and beauty. So therefore, it's honestly a massive engine in our world. And I think Copenhagen Fashion Week, so it's groundbreaking what they're doing with the minimum standards and these additional questions. It's never happened before. And I think it really pushes brands to think about sustainability next to thinking about beauty and what they put forward. So you can see all the brands that are on the schedule. They've met all these criteria. They are front runners. They are more sustainable, but still, to me, I find it there is a massive paradox. So the question I always ask is, even if it's produced more sustainability, does the item have a right to be there?
Yeah.
Because you can produce hundreds of items and make them more sustainable, or you can produce one item which is less sustainably produced. And what is the more sustainable option? So there's always this question of quantity and quality at the same time. And I think when looking at the shows, I saw craftsmanship and I saw creativity, and you really see that sustainability can be sexy, it can be cool, it's really the future. So that's really nice. But at the same time, the whole concept of designers showing a new collection and putting forward this new trend that then has the risk of being captured by the fast fashion industry and overproduced, and it puts forward this new idea of, oh, this is on trend now and we all need to buy new things. So this whole concept is a little bit obsolete in my opinion, and I haven't seen, I've seen some shows that are actually putting forward the messaging as well, and other shows don't really have a sustainability messaging but rather just tick the sustainability boxes that Copenhagen Fashion Week requires from them.
Yeah, 100%. I really like your viewpoint, and I think you're in that aspect also such an interesting person to talk to, because you were really in, like, let's say, the fully immersed in modeling and all the different aspects. You saw the behind the scenes, and you kind of went like this classical way at the beginning of, like, going into the fashion industry, being scouted very young and going through all these steps, the stays, the castings, like the typical stuff. And then you changed your viewpoint, and with what you saw, you know, it touched you and you acted on it. And now you're kind of also an expert on sustainability in fashion, and you going to Copenhagen Fashion Week, obviously you have a different eye looking at what's going on in front of you, and a more critical eye than other people who are just there, you know, seeing fashion. And you're kind of there seeing, you know, is this genuine? What are they doing? You're asking different questions. You kind of describe this story of your awakening for Imagine 5, where you kind of talked about how you would shoot 20, 50, 60 looks a day that people behind the scenes didn't even really like. And you even said there, when you were asked for a new campaign, you called your agent under tears and told her you couldn't do it. And I can relate to that, like, so much. And my question here is also, you know, there were a lot of other models, obviously, at Copenhagen Fashion Week, and which have experienced all sides of fashion behind the scenes, just like you did, and had the opportunity, you know, monetarily as well as through connections to maybe make more conscious decisions. And I know the modeling community can be pretty tight, you know, like a big friend group, especially like the Dutchies. And do you sometimes question or even judge your colleagues or challenge them, maybe for partly ignoring these realities and working kind of this classic track rather than saying, okay, I'm going to use my position and maybe also the financial security I have through modeling so long to kind of say, I'm going to make different choices? How does that work with you as you being someone who quite stands out in that industry?
Yeah, I think it's always a conversation that I do have with people, also quite often coming from them when I meet them for a coffee and they say like, oh, I'm wearing Zara, but I'm sorry. Or I recently went to a friend who had a H&M package arrive. And she's like, oh my God, I'm so ashamed it arrives when you are there. But I don't want to become this critical person that tells other people what they can and cannot do. I would rather show them a way to which you can become better. And I think I'm quite aware of the fact that I come from a point of privilege to be able to say, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to contribute to not only buying clothes, but actively selling them as well. But in order to do so, obviously, I took a big step back financially, and I got the privilege that I can take this step back and take my time. I'm now studying, I'm looking at new directions, more public speaking, advisory jobs. So I have the privilege to take this step back and stop working. But I know there's other girls that just, they have to make money. And the sad thing is that these unsustainable massive brands, they're still the brands that pay you the most money. And the sustainable industry is not there yet to actually pay the similar amount of money to their models, to their team. Maybe it will never happen because it is a different form of capitalism, a different form of economy. So I do have a conversation with friends, but I would never force them into doing anything or shame them about it. I know a lot of girls are very aware of the industry they're in. Some girls also make choices on what to work for, what not to work for. I know there's plenty of models that don't want to model for example, fur mm-hmm. anymore. And I think that for me was a first step as well. So I stopped modeling. I did a show and I was wearing a fur hat and a fur bag and a fur coat. And I think this was like back in 2014. And I felt disgusting. So that was my first step of going to my agency, like, oh, I cannot do this. And they were super acceptive about it. So I think that's for a lot of girls is their first step into connecting your values with your work. And everyone's on a different path and everyone has different values and goes at their own pace. So yeah, I think some girls do take steps, some girls don't, but it's always a discussion.
Yeah, I just wanted to know about that because I was wondering, because obviously, you know, you form friendships with other girls. And I think what you're talking about there, you know, people apologizing for wearing or buying fast fashion and kind of feeling ashamed, you know, it already shows that people, you know that there is a better way because, you know, the fact that only you being there and they knew your position on it, you know, made them apologize. And I think that's interesting. That's a little kind of like this vegan, non-vegan conversation, you know, when people eat something and then they apologize to another person for it. And I definitely think, as you said, you know, shaming somebody or, you know, telling them how much you hate what they're doing is not going to change your behavior. I think it's more just touching people's, you know, already kind of referring to their understanding that is already there about the topic and then, you know, trying to discuss it and talking about different ways, maybe also how you in your own life changed different aspects when you thought, you know, your old ways didn't fit your new values anymore. So I think it's really a hard discussion also to say because people around you know who you are. And as you said, you've also been publicly speaking, etc. So people know your stance on things. Do you think sometimes people are kind of, you know, they think maybe you would be really judgy about it or resistant to listen to somebody who is not, quote unquote, living a perfectly ethical lifestyle, who then are very unsure to know how to approach you, you know, because I think models sometimes have this, you know, air around them, or some people are maybe have some prejudices about how they are as people.
Yeah. I guess if you first meet a person, you're always a little bit wary about what the person's going to be like. I think the people that know me know that I'm very positive in that way. Always looking at the bright side, because I feel you need to show people the way rather than tell them what's wrong. You can tell them what's wrong, but not without showing them a different way of doing things. I guess it can be intimidating for people who don't know you. If you say the word climate activist, for example, you see eyebrows being raised, like, oh my God, do you glue yourself to paintings? I'm like, well, yeah. not yet. I think there's this idea about climate activists being aggressive, but actually they're really not. You know, they are the ones that are fighting for humanity. They're the ones that putting themselves, that really are putting themselves for our new future. And I think we should really, really honor that. And I would like to always show that climate activism and diplomacy can go hand in hand. Climate activism and modeling can go hand in hand. Climate activism and just having a nice conversation can go hand in hand.
Yeah.
But I guess that's something, maybe the first word shows you a little bit of fear. And then after two or three sentences, people are like, oh, okay, you know, that's actually really okay. So I had a dinner the other day, and the person next to me was actually saying, like, oh yeah, you know, I find it so hard to, I have all these things that I know I should be doing, but I find it hard to then actually change my behavior. There's always this knowledge behavior gap that everyone has. And I find it just so hard to do that. And I kind of jokingly said, well, you're sitting next to a climate activist, so tell me about it.
Yeah.
And then afterwards, we just had a really lovely, honest conversation about not being perfect. You know, I'm not perfect. I will also sometimes maybe still fly, or I will also buy something new, which might not be fully sustainable, but I'm really trying my best everywhere where I can to always pick the most sustainable choice. So that was actually, in the end, it was a super nice and lovely conversation, and very honest conversation. I think that really helps.
You know, sometimes, and I feel you are a person who, you know, speaks very calmly and level-headed and about these topics, and would be easy to approach by somebody who doesn't yet have, you know, any, as I said again, I don't necessarily like the world, but what people would call radical ideas about lifestyle changes, maybe occupation changes, etc. So sometimes, don't you have this feeling that you say, okay, I'm looking at maybe people in my circle, people I know in the industry, and that right now, when people who are educated, who have access to the internet and the news, know exactly, you know, what is going on in the world, the breakdowns of climate and ecological collapses, mass extinctions, etc., and the huge impact that the fashion industry has on all that pollution and suffering in the world, that you say, okay, you know, maybe sometimes, come on, there is a time right now to say we put personal comfort, especially if in a quote-unquote privileged position, on the back burner, and say, okay, right now it doesn't matter, I have the information and I'm going to act on it step by step when I have the information. Isn't there sometimes this feeling where you say, okay, you know, come on, it's nice to kind of do it soft and slow and comfortable and all, but sometimes you just have to recognize that there is a time to really act and to also be uncomfortable?
Yeah, I think it's always a very uncomfortable, painful discussion to hold up a mirror to someone and show them that, you know, you are actually part of a problem. Obviously, as a person, your impact will never be as big as the impact of a full company, is going to be. But we do all have this responsibility to really act on the knowledge that we have right now. And that is that we are living a very unsustainable life, especially in our circles where people are highly educated. They know what's happening and still they do go on weekends away with a plane. And yeah, I do find it very frustrating from time to time. And I do question and challenge people in their behavior. But I think it's hard to change someone's behavior unless they really want to, or unless legislation is in place to really make that behavior hard to do.
Yeah.
I would show them the way I would do it. So for example, when I did a job in Scotland, I went there by train. So now I'm always talking to people like, oh my God, this train ride to Scotland. It was honestly one of the most beautiful train rides. It's not that long either. It's 9 hours. You take 4 hours to London from Amsterdam. And then from London to Edinburgh, it's an additional four and a half hours. And it's going through this beautiful landscape. And it's actually really, really, really lovely to really show people that it is possible. But yeah, sometimes the conversations are not fun and they are very uncomfortable. And if someone willingly doesn't want to know, then it's hard to have a conversation because they're just going to shut you out. So then I feel it wouldn't really add something if I would then show them a different way, because they close their eyes and they close their heart to it. But it only helps if the people are kind of open to receiving advice. Well, I don't really like the word advice, but to receiving a different viewpoint, then you can have a conversation and then you can dive deeper into this behavior gap that exists all around us.
Yeah, I really feel this approach you just described it really fits your personality or what I could see so far. And I think it also, you know, depends on the person. Obviously, there is not one right approach. And, you know, if you talk to 10 different people, you would have to use different approaches to make each of them, you know, change or be willing to listen, as you just said. But I really feel this approach suits you, and we can all just, you know, do our best, because at the end you can't please everybody. But yeah, I wanted to know a little more again on the industry side. You know, as I mentioned, you know quite a lot about sustainable fashion and concepts like circularity, sustainable alternative materials, reusing water, alternative dyes, upcycling, etc. There's so much that is talked about. If you could transform the fashion industry as it is now, you know, what would some of the first changes that you would make be, where you would say they would really, in your opinion, have a very big kind of immediate impact?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think it's so important to start from a vision of what would a good, sustainable, regenerative, circular industry look like, and then work back from there. And I think the first thing if I would do, if I were president for a day, I would actually the first legislation I would put forward is living wages. Like every brand has to pay a living wage to all the garment workers in their supply chain. And that would make such a massive change, because if you pay people for what they are doing, and if you pay them a fair or a living wage, automatically every item that you produce will become more expensive. So in the end, you might, instead of produce 30% too much, which a lot of brands do, they overproduce for 30% and then just throw it away, burn it, ship it off to a country somewhere in Africa or in Asia. So the first thing to do is make people pay the actual cost for every item that they produce. And that will start with a living wage. So you also have that social aspect coming into it. And then the second thing is, it's called like make externalities internal, which means if you pollute a river, you have to pay for your pollution. If you exploit a person, you have to pay for that exploitation. Now we're not paying the true cost of our items. We're actually producing very cheap, overproducing very cheap and throwing it away. And all these valuable resources and all these labor hours really literally go to waste. So that's something I would do in the front, so at the production phase of the fashion industry, to really change things there. And then I would, in addition, in a perfect world, I would put a tax on resources, and I would subsidize labor, so that in that way it will become cheaper to repair something or change something, remake something, than it would be to buy a new item. So you have a shift there as well. So that's kind of in the middle, on the retailer side, on the brand side. And then on the consumer side, on the marketing side, I would really be very strict in the greenwashing claims that brands still nowadays can do. The language that brands use, like must have, new trend, buy now, all these kind of this whole discourse of forcing consumers to consume and overconsume and feel that they are missing the boat if they don't buy this new item right now, and all these TikTok hauls that you see where they say, oh, I bought this many items and you can buy them as well, it's so cheap, all this kind of language needs to dissolve, so that we shift away from this consumerism society towards maybe a society that searches for depth instead of newness all the time. I don't know if that makes sense, but
yes, I think you should actually, Kiki, you should become a consultant probably for fashion brands who want to make a shift away. Because I was just listening, I was thinking, oh, this is so nice and thought through. No, thank you so much for your thoughts on this. And I think it's also interesting, as you said, like with the living wages, that you can change one thing where it might not be obvious that it will have a ripple effect so far down to change a thing down the line that is also a big problem. So I think it's really important also to look at these pictures holistically and say, okay, what is connected to what? If I change one thing here, what will the ripple effect downwards be? You know, both the negative and the positive, because I think sometimes we underestimate how if we change one thing, how a lot of other things will be affected as well. So I really like your ideas on this. And on kind of the topic of inspiration and having a new vision, at Copenhagen Fashion Week, maybe you could share some of the designers or projects, the work there that really impressed you most, that kind of left an impression on you, that were filled, you know, with genuine ideas, with love for the art form, with creativity and true, you know, striving for better fashion and for consciousness, sustainability, etc. Was there anything there that really stood out to you where you said, wow, this is pretty great?
Yeah, 100%. First of all, I really like what you're saying about ripple effects, like the positive ripple effects and also the negative ripple effect, because every change you're going to make, there will be negative results as well. So it's always good to keep those in mind and really think forward of what will my change do in the long run. So I really like that you said that. But then on Copenhagen Fashion Week, yeah, I think I have three examples that really stood out for me because they approach it in very different ways. So the first one is this smaller brand called TG Botanical. It's a designer from Ukraine, and I think it's the second time she showed on Copenhagen Fashion Week, and she really has nature as her inspiration. So she only uses natural materials like nettle, linen, cotton, and all her dyes are natural as well. So she uses flowers, all these kind of pigments. So she really has this love she shares for nature, and you can see it back in her collection actually, because this collection was based on the earth crust. So the clothes were kind of this rippled, crusty texture, which I think it's so nice to honor nature in your design. So I absolutely loved her show. She had gorgeous, diverse, inclusive models, beautifully made clothes in earthy tones. So for me, she was definitely one of my highlights that I saw. And then there is another brand that I had the honor to talk with, and that's Skal. They're a Danish brand, and they really approach fashion in this longevity kind of almost degrowth way. They want to really push their consumers to buy one piece that's of good quality, that's seasonless. They don't do trends. They make clothes that will last a very long time. They use natural materials. All their wool actually comes from Danish sheep and a Danish spinning mill that they have. So they produce more locally. Even the labels in their clothes, they're now changing. Sometimes the label in your clothes is still polyester, but now they're changing that to cotton as well. So they're really thinking of this slow approach, really encouraging their consumers that their styles will always stay the same, their sizes will always stay the same, so that people don't have to send back their clothes if they don't fit. If you have this kind of shirt, you know it will fit you the next time you buy it as well. And they guarantee long life repairs as well for their Danish customers. So they have this very slow fashion approach, which I really like and really adore. And then I talked with one of the co-founders of Gunny, Nikolai Refstrup, and he is really a technical man. So he's very much on the green growth kind of side of the spectrum. And he has all these really great technological, innovative ideas of using lower impact materials. They're working together with different labs that create a certain cellulose from sequestering carbon dioxide. And he really pushes for, we need to make money. We need to grow as a brand in order to really finance these innovative solutions like cellulose from carbon sequestration, but also recycling cotton into a pulp that can actually be reused. So he's really on the technical side of the fashion industry. In a rational way, I think in an emotional way, he was also more, he literally said to me, if fashion could stop existing right now, I would 100% support it. It's just that I know fashion will not stop existing and people are gonna buy new styles all the time. So we better make sure we make the best items there are. And their goal is to make a climate neutral or even climate positive collection in the future. So they're working towards it. And what I really liked what he said was that he as a brand, like Gunny as a brand, really makes some sacrifices in their choices. So for example, one of the sacrifices they made is that they made a promise from 2023, they're not going to use virgin leather anymore. And that's a massive carbon dioxide source for their production. I think he said it was around 21% of their production, of their carbon footprint. So that's a massive footprint that they have. So you might say, like, well, that's easy, just cut the virgin leather. But then on the other side, that means some styles are not replaceable yet for them. But also it will cost them millions of dollars. Like 9% of their revenue actually comes from these virgin leather products. So that's a big dent in their financial side. But still, he said, we made this promise, we want to make this promise, we need to become more sustainable, and for that we do need to make sacrifices.
When people are genuine and they care and they use their know-how and really put their energy in finding new ways and finding new solutions that are better than these, you know, archaic, exploitative and these such wasteful ways of doing fashion, you know, that's impressive. When people say we're making these sacrifices for us of their financial popularity otherwise, you know, that's impressive. And that shows such, you know, strength of character, and not the people who get rich by, you know, exploiting resources, being careless and really not caring the very least bit about the people they employ. And I think this is something, you know, it's so impressive if a person stands there like that and says to you, I make my living from making fashion, but if fashion could stop existing today, I would back that up. You know, what kind of a, you know, courageous, great thing is that to say? And I think it needs to be highlighted so much more that these people, you know, they are really the stars in the fashion industry. They are the ones that at also personal risk and at overcoming great obstacles and putting so much more work and thought into becoming better, becoming different. That is really what should be at the very top. And at every fashion magazine, which should be highlighted everywhere in that industry. And yeah, I can just applaud that. And I think these were some very, really progressive and also, you know, deep projects you shared from the Fashion Week, because I find sometimes, you know, when people talk about different brands and sustainability, they saw it's a little flat, you know, it doesn't really mm-hmm. go into depth. But I really like the examples you shared. And as I really like this point that you just mentioned with how he said if the fashion industry didn't exist, he would back that up. Because I think the thought is also often, you know, with a truly sustainable fashion industry, in my opinion, you know, the big polluters in the game like Shein or Zara, H&M, ASOS, Forever 21. And I really also want to name the brands, because I think often people, you know, they always talk about fast fashion, but it's like, who is fast fashion? You know, fast fashion has a face and a name. It's not some abstract concept. You know, you might find it in a store in your town or city, so you can see where it lies. So I think it's important to also say names. And all these companies alike, I think they couldn't even exist, these models of mass production, trends, and disposal with discarded clothing flooding landfills, deserts, and garbage dumps. Like, I don't see how it could be transformed to be sustainable and ethical. So I think the question here is, do we create meaningful change by doing away with that form of destruction altogether, which would be incredibly hard, because obviously there is money and people working in this industry, and it's already kind of set up. It's a framework that is ingrained in economies and daily life. Or do we transform it completely, also incredibly hard, and saying we just have a whole different way of producing clothing altogether that doesn't include the structures that are there now? And is it even possible? My question to you is, do you think it's possible at this scale that the fashion industry and fast fashion exists now to transform it to be sustainable within the structures that are there now?
It's a very philosophical question. No, I like it. Because I think it really comes down to our idea of success, which equals growth. So in our world, we have all different types of rhythms. We have seasons, we have tidal rhythms, we have the rhythms of flowers blooming and then dying, rabbits exploding in population and then being hunted down by foxes again. But we lose all these rhythms because of this deafening marching of the rhythm of growth that we as humanity have put forward as the only rhythm that really should exist. So I think it goes a little bit deeper with, are we okay with not growing, and are we okay with actually sometimes a big tree falls down? So to me, if I look with this vision to the fashion industry, and I see these massive fast fashion brands that you name so well, Boohoo, Forever 21, Zara, the whole Inditex, the Shein, which is horrible, and there's now Temu, which is also things, not only clothes but things, and they're pretty up there with Shein. So that's very, very frightening to see that these developments are there as well. These massive brands, they build their whole business idea on exploitation of people and exploitation of nature. So if we change legislation to make that impossible, I think they will never ever be on time to change their business plan. They will never be profitable in a fair world, so they will fall down. And I think we have to be okay with these bigger trees to fall down. If you look at a forest and you have this massive oak tree that stands there and it really takes up all the sun, right? if it eventually dies and falls down, it creates a massive gap in the leaves, and you can see the sky again and the sun comes through, and that will allow for the smaller trees and the smaller bushes to soak up this energy of the sun and start growing as well. So if a big tree falls down, I'm pretty sure smaller trees will start growing. These more innovative, smaller brands will take over this gap that the fast fashion industry leaves behind and really do it in a more diverse way. I think we really have to go towards this industry where no one company will own more than 4 or 5% of the market share of this industry, to get a more diverse and equal industry. So to answer your question, I think the radical change that we will need and hopefully see in the coming future will be too quick and too radical for the massive fast fashion companies to really reshape their business plan. And I hope they in the future it's impossible for them to exist.
Yeah, I think the forest was really an interesting metaphor there. But yeah, as for me, and as you mentioned before, I think it also is a philosophical question. And I think that really the point that for me personally, it would be completely fine if all of the dark side of, you know, the whole fast fashion industry, all these big fashion moguls, let's call them, if they, you know, cease to exist, I would be completely fine to leave the field only for sustainable brands who are ethical, who are slow fashion, who kind of try and work as best with the rhythms with nature, and who are really conscious of resource use and to have a personal connection to their suppliers, to the people who work with them. And, you know, also this, everything that used to exist, for example, when my grandmother was little, to say we care for everything, we keep everything as long as it's in any way usable, and we have a cobbler or somebody who sews who can repair these things for us, so that we really honor them and respect them, respect the craftsmanship, respect the materials, have a piece we truly love and that we really use a long time. And I think that mindset shift, that is so much more valuable, to also have a personal connection to a piece and to say you're grateful for what you have, it was crafted and made with care and with respect for nature, that is always more valuable than any piece of like 50 pieces of some sort of fashion you have no connection to, you don't know where it's from, but you know it's polluted and you know it comes from pollution and pain and tears probably. So I think this is just a huge mindset shift in seeing where the value really lies. Because I think fashion, as you touched on before, is not only about fashion. It's, you know, the fashion industry, that part of it. There's a part of fashion that is art and creativity and also necessity. I mean, we still need clothing. But I think when it comes to the dark side of fashion, it's also about overconsumption, about filling empty voids, about making money with things you make people want, and making it at the lowest possible cost for those who benefit from it. So what do you maybe think some of the issues with people's emotional connection to what the fast fashion industry represents is? Why for some people it's so hard letting that go and letting go of buying all these things?
Yeah, very true. And I think your grandma is absolutely right. We need to use what we have and really build relationships with the clothes that we have, that we buy. You invest in something because it really fits you, not because you saw an influencer wear it. You want a piece because you think you're going to keep it for a long time, not because you just need it for a party. And that's a very important mind shift to have. And let's be fair, I think we have enough clothes to dress the next six generations, six generations. So stop producing everything now doesn't mean that you can never buy something new again. So you can still buy new things. You just need to buy way less new things every year. I think there's a research done by the Holding Cold Institute that say if you buy five new items every year, you stay within planetary boundaries. And it's better if these are sustainably produced, obviously. But it being sustainable in fashion doesn't mean I can never buy something new again, or I can never wear something new again. Vintage can be new. Borrowing something from a friend can be new. Swapping clothes, renting clothes, everything that will still feel new. And I think as humanity, we have this drive to always have something new, and we need a massive mental shift that we start appreciating going into depth with what we have, going into depth with the friends, the conversations that we have with them, the nature, the clothes that we already have. Literally dive deep into your closet and find new things, rather than constantly striving for this new thing, new experience, new people, new countries. You know, I think we have to stop and really think about what we have and dive deeper into that rather than always looking up. And I think the fashion industry has a massive, massive responsibility in that. What you're saying is we want new things. Influencers show us we need new things. The fashion industry is a marketing machine, and the fashion industry honestly shapes our idea of what beauty is. They do so with the models that they pick, the locations that they shoot, the clothes that they produce, the influencers that they pick. People aspire to be part of this new beauty. So if you switch this thing around and you think about what the fashion industry could do if they reshape this whole idea of beauty, if they reshape this whole idea of what we as humans desire, and they really start pushing for this cultural shift in our lifestyles to become more sustainable. So what if a fashion brand shows you the multiple ways in which you can combine an item, or a fashion brand shows you how to repair your clothes, a fashion brand shows you that it's actually nicer to have a conversation with a friend than go to the shop, that it's about the experience of being together and shopping rather than the actual item that you purchase. So they have a responsibility, but also this opportunity to really shift our minds in that. And I think that's something we should also see in the Fashion Week. So to come back to the Copenhagen Fashion Week that we saw, it is definitely groundbreaking, and it's definitely changing the fashion industry to put forward these minimal standards. But the concept of designer showing a new collection is quite old, and it could be so cool to see activistic brands really giving this new discourse, really showing us a new way of perceiving fashion. And I spoke with the co-founder of Carcel, which is a Danish brand that is now no longer existing, but they opened Copenhagen Fashion Week in 2020. And they did so with an anti-fashion show. So they built this catwalk, they invited people, and instead of showing a new collection, they actually showed the impact of the fashion industry on big screens and how they were making their clothes more responsible, lower impact, and socially fair. And that's a radical different idea of using the momentum of a fashion week where you have all these creative minds together that could push for this cultural shift and really, really change our idea of beauty. So I really loved her approach of how she viewed this opportunity of opening Fashion Week. And I think you also see it for example, Vivienne Westwood, who unfortunately passed away last year, but is such an icon in using her shows to make political statements, models walking down the catwalk with protest boards, her clothes literally scream activistic words, and she has this voice, and she uses her platform to really make people aware of the impact. And that's something that I missed this year, some activistic, radically different voice that was there, and I would have loved to see that.
Yeah, I think let me ask you, the brand you were talking about who opened with an anti-fashion kind of display, Did that cease to exist because of the way they were trying to be more sustainable, or was that a different reason?
Yeah, so I think she, the way I heard it from her is that they just didn't survive COVID.
Yeah.
And I think also it's very hard for a activistic sustainable brand to thrive in a, in an economic system that is still linear and that still benefits those that that waste and that exploit. So I guess in two ways it was hard for Carcel to exist. So now she is more a consult. She gives advice. She talks about fashion. So maybe her voice is still being put for the good.
Yeah, I think that's really very courageous. And yeah, it's just, you know, this thought of what kind of economy and society is it that rewards the wrong things, you know, these horrible things in such a grand scale, and then makes it so hard for people and companies or projects who show respect for nature and people and so much love and care, makes it so hard for them. You know, I think it's horrible that on a big scale, the things that cause the world and Earth so much pain, they are still being rewarded the most. And I just hope that this slow and conscious movement takes over and that there's really a widespread realization that will set in to make people see where the value and the love really lies, and where us as, you know, communities of beings on this planet, where we really thrive most, because that's opposite of all that horridness that is happening in most places, and our lives will be so much more happy and fulfilled and content if we, you know, just lived more in accordance with nature and of what human needs actually are, because the other things are just, you know, fake. It's not real and it's empty. As you said, like with fast fashion, it's you keep buying and buying and there's no satisfaction because there is no real satisfaction or value there. And I think rising above that and realizing that is something very incredibly powerful. So I really want to thank you for sharing your voice and also the work that you're doing, and, you know, being so kind about it and so conscious about it. So thank you for coming on for a second time, and I have to say I like this talk even better than the first one. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, Stella. It was really lovely to be back, and I really enjoyed our conversation and what you're doing with your podcast and opening this conversation about these different topics. So thank you.
Also, I want to acknowledge and honor Indigenous and First Nations peoples as custodians of most of planet Earth's biodiversity and bearers of ancient knowledge. I pay my respects to elders past, present, and emerging, and recognize all Indigenous and First Nations peoples' strength, resilience, and deep connection to nature. Thank you.